Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Jeremy Heidi.
Yay, Jeremy gets to be Brett tonight.
Yep. Jeremy's imitating Brett, or if he's cloning Brett, or if he's just pinch hitting for Brett. We have to figure out which of these is the normal course of action.
I would say
to Brett, probably.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's call it pinch hitting.
Yeah, I like that. That works.
Cool. Yes, I've been watching tons of coverage of the winter meetings on the Major League Baseball Network. I love that channel.
Yeah.
Have I mentioned that I love that channel?
I think we've heard that once, maybe twice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Intentional Talk is probably one of the best sports shows on TV. And I have to either watch it or watch a rerun of it because Kevin Millar makes me laugh. And that literally is the bright spot of my day. His "Got Him" segment at the end,
I've never seen it.
You will have to check it out. And the cool thing is, you can actually watch it live on MLB.com. They stream it when they show it live. Like, so 7 p.m., no, 5 p.m. Eastern time this week, you can catch it live on MLB.com. Ding.
There you go. All right. Hey, other interesting news that everybody's talking about these days. Planet Kepler 22b, which has been discovered by the Kepler probe, whose mission is to discover at least super Earths. As you probably know, at this point in time, the planet is sitting in its star's Goldilocks zone, which of course means the temperature should be just right for life. And it's very, very intriguing, but I have to admit to being very much more cautious about it, having done some reading on it, and I hate to kind of be the party pooper, but it's not another Earth that is found. And it may not even be Earth-like. It just happens to be in a good place.
So it's kind of like, it's got the best parking spot in the mall, but doesn't know which store it wants to go to yet?
No, it's more like it's got the best parking spot. It's more like it's got the best parking spot in the mall, but we don't know whether it's a Mercedes or a Pacer.
Okay.
They don't have any spectral analysis on it. They just know there's an object out there, and they really won't know anything more until summer when ground-based observation devices can come to bear on it because of the location and space in which it was found. They do know that it's about twice the size of Earth, which means it could be a big Earth or it could be a small Neptune. It's hard to tell at this point. So while it's really cool, to me what's really most significant about it all is that Kepler is beginning to do what it was advertised to do, which is to look for exoplanets that might be Earth-like, you know, in the proper places. And that's a start. That's, to me, that's what this indicates more than anything. So
yeah, I read a little bit about that, and they're putting so much data out there. It's like 2,000 different planets, and they've got through like 28 or something.
Mm-hmm. Right,
so much
exactly.
data coming in.
Yeah.
How far away is this particular one?
600 light years. Which amuses me, because some of the news reports I've read is sitting just outside our solar system, 600 light years away. It's like, God, no. It's non-scientific people writing for non-scientific readers. And not that I'm like this brilliant astrophysicist mind, but I know just enough to know that's not sitting outside our solar system. Alpha Centauri is sitting outside our solar system on the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. I mean, it's intriguing, and I'm not trying to rain on anyone's parade. I think it's really, really cool. But I've had a number of people approach me at work saying, hey, they found another Earth. I was like, no, guys, they haven't.
Now, let me
they really haven't.
This. This new planet, its star is 600 light years away, right?
Correct.
And how far away is Alpha Centauri?
4.3 light years away.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I'm like, Alpha Centauri is the closest star, and it's like a hell of a lot closer. Why are they looking so far away from home?
Well,
or is that just the first one they've...
No, they've been looking around. I mean, one of the things, Alpha Centauri is really, it's actually a trinary star system, so it's not likely that you're going to find an Earth-like, the potential for an Earth-like planet there. The thing is that the parent star for Kepler-22b is actually a G-type star. It's a little smaller than our own sun, but roughly about the same age. So that's one of the things they're looking for. You know, I mean, to a certain degree, by definition, they're looking at stars that seem similar to our own, because at least, you know, we have one example we know works, and that's the one that we're living in right now. So that's kind of what they're doing with. Now, I haven't read anything about the other exoplanets. I think those are probably more on the order of the Jupiter-sized worlds that have been previously found. But I will have to do more reading.
Okay, I know what you're spending your Christmas vacation doing.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. So, but it's exciting news. I mean, like I said, I think it's neat, and it just goes to show that. More than anything, I think it's just amazing the technology has been advancing, and that there's at least still some impetus in our society to make and want to make discoveries of this nature.
Like I said, I'm happy they're still looking and they still want to look. So, booyah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of looking, there's a good segue for us. Tonight we're going to be deep geeking on the unproduced Crusade script, The End of the Line, which was the proposed season finale for season one, and it is all about looking for things, and maybe things that you don't want to be finding. So I would say let's take a break and then come back and do some geeking.
Okay.
So, you're still hanging on to that tiny thread of denial, trying to convince yourself that sci-fi has nothing whatsoever to do with your life. Well, you better think again, Sparky. That tiny cell phone has no basis in Starfleet communicators. Those hands-free earpieces now used by virtually everybody didn't come down from the ear of Lieutenant Uhura. And that cute little Rumba vacuum cleaner that you use far too infrequently wasn't hijacked off an Imperial Star Cruiser. Nah, not a chance. Because if it were true, then you would be forced to turn on that Flash Gordon-inspired box on your desk called a computer and listen to SliceOfSciFi.com, the Bexim satellite radio show that will turn your sci-fi into reality.
are back to discuss what would have been the Crusade Season 1 finale episode, yes. The End of the Line.
Yes. Well, let's give a synopsis here to this episode so people who have not had the advantage of time or space to have read this particular script. It opens with Excalibur tracking the signal of the mysterious ship that was responsible for, or so Gideon thinks was responsible for, the destruction of the Cerberus. Through Galen's efforts, they manage to lock on. They jump into a small system, evade some mines, find a base that's basically an Earth Force base, because they are told to stand down and the enemy fighters coming in are all Star Furies and Thunderbolts. The major who commands the base basically tells Gideon to turn around and go home.
And of course our intrepid captain always does what he's ordered to do, right?
Exactly. Well, at first he says, well, you know, he kind of plays the bluff of the major and says, you know, so, well, you know, if I'm not supposed to be out here, you're not supposed to be out here. And so the major at least meets with Gideon and basically tells him, you know what, we're off the beaten path because we're working on technologies to help defend the Earth and just not something that people need to know. And you don't need to know either. So that's all you need to know and go away. And at that point, Gideon, like you say, decides that, well, that's not a good enough answer. And he enlists the aid of Galen to try to infiltrate the base. And Galen says, well, are you sure this is what you want to do? Because you might find out some things that you might not want to find out. Implying that, he says, you have so little innocence left. And Gideon's response is, all my innocence was left when the Cerberus was destroyed. And Galen says, well, not really, but there's only one way for you to find out, and that's to go find out. So Galen drops Gideon off outside a handy-dandy airlock that leads into the base, which is this huge underground complex where figures are working on other ships, which are obviously shadow technology hybrids. But that's not the worst of it. The worst of it is we see shadow hybrid people walking around working on it. Yes. All creepy and sort of carapaced over with shadow-looking stuff. And
shadow course, zombies?
Yeah, kind of. That's a good way to look at it, yeah. Because when one of them sees Gideon, he goes, "Roar!" And then the rest of them start going, "Roar!" And, of course, Gideon doesn't get very far because here come the big space marines with their BFGs.
With BFGs and shadow Kevlar.
Yes, right, exactly. So Gideon in his cell is approached by the major again, who basically says, okay, now look here. You're obviously smarter than the average bear. You know, you've gotten, you know, you're not the first person to track us down and try to find out what's going on here. You've gotten farther than anybody else, so you're obviously a man of higher intelligence and more resourcefulness. So the major says, you know, I'm going to give you a deal. I'll tell you what I can tell you, what's going on, and then it's your choice. You can either join us or you never leave this place again. So basically, the major tells Gideon that what's going on is research into other organic tech. And, of course, he points out that the Excalibur is a combination of Minbari and Vorlon technology left over from the Shadow War. But that was not the only technology left over from the Shadow War, and it's that of the Shadows. He basically tells Gideon, says, hey, you know, why should we not be investigating this? We need, you know, all possibilities need to be explored to defend Earth, especially in the face of the Drak attack. And even implies that, hey, it's the same technology the Drak are using, and we might become closer to finding a cure before, you know, as opposed to you people running around digging holes.
Yeah.
And then the real kicker is, he says, you know, you've been close to someone using shadow technology for a long, long time. And he reveals that Galen and the Technomages have been making use of shadow technology in their implants.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is sort of like a kick in the teeth to Gideon, but he doesn't let on. Galen, of course, comes to the rescue to break him out of there. When they, when Galen sees the shadow zombies, he basically covers himself in what looks to be sleeker shadow armor, sends out lightning bolts, and basically the implication is that he's frying everybody, or in his words, putting them out of their misery.
Mm-hmm.
When they get back to the flyer, Gideon basically confronts Galen about what he knows, especially with the shadow technology, and wants to know whether or not Galen has really just been using Gideon all along to try to get close. And Gideon, or Galen, does admit that, well, you know, it's not a coincidence that the Technomages were flying by at the time that the Cerberus was destroyed and Gideon was stranded in space, that they were leaving space to try to keep people from using their technology for ill. They were kind of keeping an eye on things, and that's kind of what Galen's mission is to see what people have found out about shadow technology and what they're doing with it, if they're finding it. So Gideon feels kind of used and is very unhappy about it. Galen understands, but he is very saddened that in some ways he feels like he's violated the trust of a very dear friend. Gideon decides he's going to blow this wide open, and he goes to Mars. He has Eilerson arrange a conference or a press conference where he can make this revelation. Despite his best efforts, the command staff has found out about what Gideon has been up to.
And despite his best efforts to keep them clear of it, so whatever kimchi hits the fan won't land on him, land on them because of him. So.
Right. Yes. Well, as they head on their merry way to spill the beans, Galen, of course, is keeping an eye on Gideon, and too late spots a sniper who puts a – it's implied that it's a bullet, actually, the way it's written. But anyways
– yeah, it's implied that a high-powered projectile rifle of some sort is propelled at high speed through Gideon's chest.
Yes.
Ah, darn humans, and they're allergic to highly, well, not just holes, but fast-moving, you know, small fast-moving metal objects.
Exactly. So, as Gideon falls from the impact, that's the end.
That's it.
That's it.
Fade to black.
Mm-hmm.
In so many ways. So, comments. What do you think? How do you feel like this plays out?
This would have been a cliffhanger right up there with the Babylon 5 season 3 one.
Yes, with Sheridan jumping to his apparent death.
With Sheridan jumping to his apparent doom, Garibaldi being kidnapped, and just crap hitting the fan, where you're like, you literally, it's one of those cliffhanger moments where, oh my goodness, what do they do from here, you know?
Right, well, because you have the whole fate of humanity supposedly riding on this, and you just
and the captain
got shot.
It's assassinated, right, or attempted assassination. We don't know.
Yeah.
If he's dead, we're going to assume that was probably a dead-on hit. Whether or not they can save his life afterwards, we don't know. But yeah, it's one of those, oh my goodness, they went there kind of things, you know? What was the joke? Not even Babylon 5 could replace lead actor four times or something.
Yeah, right, right. Well, and I know there's almost, you know, I imagine, I as I read it, it occurred to me, man, if this was actually aired and I'm watching this, that would have been my first thought. Would be that it's Jeffrey Sinclair all over again.
Different way, but yeah, because at the end of Zahadum, we didn't know whether or not Sheridan would come back, or if Sheridan would come back as Sheridan. At the end of this one, we don't know if, you know, how much jeopardy the mission is in, because we don't know if he lives or dies. See, we don't know what'll happen to the mission if he dies.
Watching the series before it, I would have thought that of course he's going to make it. They're going to save him. And then I think that would have been the gotcha in the next season, is he didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think right. The way that it was set up, I think you just think, you know, well, obviously something's going to happen. Galen's going to save him. There's going to be some kind of crazy thing he does or something. There, you know, he's not going to die.
Well, and that's the power of the hindsight that we have. If we had seen this then in 99 or early 2000, whenever it would have aired, the internet would have, or the at least the Babylon 5 corner of the internet would have lost its collective rabbit mind, and we would have been talking about this all summer long, just like we did with Zahadum. But what we know now from the whispers is, actually, I would love to figure out how it actually would have happened, because we know now that one scenario has it such that Gideon's consciousness is actually what's living in the apocalypse box. How does that happen?
Right.
How does that transfer actually happen?
Well, maybe that's Galen's doing.
Well, we also have from the Crusade Writer's Bible that Galen would either freak out or have a hissy fit if he knew Gideon had the box.
Right.
We don't know
there's a couple things I want to say to the ends of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment where Galen talks to Matheson about chasing the hybrid ship, and how did the captain know, and
mm-hmm.
you know, Mathis says, "Well, I can't tell you," but Galen, you know, and he actually even talks to Gideon at one point and says, it's interesting that you know about this, and I just hope you're not messing with things that you shouldn't be messing with."
Right.
Right. So who knows? I mean, that is one of the things that's really
And that's
so
the that's
about
the,
this whole process.
Yeah. That's the one thing about the Apocalypse Box we don't know yet. We don't know that would Galen be upset that Gideon has the Apocalypse Box because it's messing with a continuum sort of thing, or if he's dealing with an entity that he doesn't quite understand yet, would Galen want to take possession of the box, or would he want to destroy it? We don't know.
Or for that matter, is he worried that the box, in a similar vein with what Gideon discovers on this remote base regarding shadow technology and implants and technomages, is that what this represents? Like, crap, it's another landmine somebody dropped around that I got to clean up after, and if he was mm-hmm. messing with it, then he's going to know things. You know, that I don't know. It'd be very interesting.
Yeah,
very interesting. See, one of the other things that I am intrigued with this, in some ways, you know, I remember at the time when Crusade aired, and the conversation about giant story arcs had come up. I don't know if I remember reading it on a message board or someplace, but you know, the question to Straczynski was, you know, Babylon 5 was this big 5-year giant story. What about Crusade? And at the time he said, well, having done the giant story arc for him with Crusade, the story arc is just another tool on the belt. And I believe that's almost an exact quote, which kind of, you know, at the time, I wasn't quite sure how to take that, whether that meant that it was, you know, the arc stuff was going to be there, but it wasn't going to be as intense as it was in Babylon 5. I don't know, but clearly, after reading this script and To the Ends of the Earth and the story treatments for War Story and Walls of Hell and a couple others, this is all heavy-duty arc stuff. And I don't know how you don't keep doing that at the same level that you did in Babylon 5, especially when you've shot your you've shot your ship's captain in the chest. Other little elements in here that I find are interesting is we have an exchange between Darina and Gideon, where just before he goes on his little reconnoiter, he tells Darina that, you know, he's trying to keep Matheson
safe.
Safe, yeah, right. But he's got data crystals hidden around his quarters, Gideon's quarters, that need to get into Matheson's hand should he not return. And basically tells the resident thief, and I like that, she goes, well, where are they? And he says, well, if I told you that, I wouldn't need a thief, now would I?
I love that exchange. She's like, it's like, there's data crystals in my quarters. Go in there, get them, give them to Matheson when the time is right. Mess up the room a little bit. Where are they? Well, if I just told you, then I would need you.
Yeah, right, right. Now, but as that scene opens,
yes,
she's looking at the sword.
Her newly acquired sword in a story we don't have yet, damn it.
Yeah, right, right. And it's interesting. I'm trying to find the bit in the script. I'm just going to read this one little bit.
Yeah, she says, you know, she looks at the sword. She uncovers it. It glows around the edges a little bit. And she covers it back up and answers right. The door or something like that.
Right, and it says, like, and it says in the script, it's the sword that she gets in a later episode that will air before this one. like, yeah. And I know, I mean,
I missed that wording. So that means that this one was written before.
War Story and all that. Yes, exactly. Here it is. She gets up crosses to where she has stored the sword she gets in a later episode, which will be aired before this one. Oh, that doesn't help us any.
Yeah. Between this story, the whatever story unfolds where she gets her sword and the Bester story, think of how much fun we could have had if we had gotten a full season order for Crusade.
Oh, I mean, yeah. And likely that if they'd gotten the full season order for Crusade, they probably would have gone at least another year. Because here's the thing that's really interesting when I reading through this and in the last couple scripts. In some ways, it is reminiscent of what we had with Babylon 5. We've got ancient dark enemy on the move. We have alien technologies being used in strange ways. We have a conspiracy in the government. We have mysterious aliens that show up. Were there, you know, I'm thinking of the aliens that abduct Darina in War Story. Mm-hmm. You know, awfully similar to the Wolf 957 aliens. You know, there's a hint of first one about them. And if you read in Volume 2 of Other Voices for Crusade, there's an interview that the Jason Davis has with Carrie Dobro. And it's indicated that she would have likely have received technomage-type implants herself, with the implication being that whoever abducted her had given her these things.
So somebody else other than the Vorlons is tooling around modifying bipedal creatures.
Right, exactly. So it's like at the end of the season, there's all sorts of players on the board. And so it gets back to my original comment. If the Ark is just one more tool, which sounds like it, I don't know how you get away from even earlier than what they did in Babylon 5, year 2, boy, if you just kind of would, okay, let's just go start looking at different planets again. Man, I think I would have been a little irate, frankly.
I got nothing.
So.
I don't know. They brought Mars into it. I mean, maybe it was going to go back to Mars. You never know. Maybe that would have had more of an anchor for us back into the old Sol system.
Yeah, that could be. I think it's interesting that he went back to Mars.
Right. That kind of caught my attention there.
You know.
Well, not really, because with that's where the current seat of EarthGov is now.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Now, here's the other thing that I find interesting. This is something that gets me thinking. And tell me if I'm going down the dark path. Feel free. I understand the script. The commander of the Earth Force base is named Major Lee. I understand what he's talking about in terms of, you know, Earth's in danger. Why not explore all the possibilities? And while clearly it's horrific whatever has happened to the people who are working on the base.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the thing is that it does. I can't quite see Lee as being a cardboard villain. You know, yeah, ha-ha, we're doing nefarious things here with things man was not meant to know.
Well, that's just it. He's not doing nefarious things. He has been empowered by his government to play with dangerous technologies, try to find a way to take them
for
his government to use for defense. And as we know, all of the best intentions are paved right to the heart of Zahadum.
Yeah, he's a puppet.
We don't know that he's a puppet. He may have full on drunk the Kool-Aid. He may not know how fully dangerous shadow technology is in the hands of a race that doesn't fully understand it. He may know and may think he's doing a service by trying to figure it out so more people aren't hurt later.
You know, actually,
we don't know.
You might be right, because maybe he's the guy says that's able to push the button to blow the whole base up if it goes bad. You know, maybe he's that guy.
Because that's what he was telling Gideon in that one conversation. Cerberus was an accident. Ship merging got out of hand, and we lost control of it, and the Cerberus was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Oops. You know, there was no malicious intent. It was just... And We actually saw that happen on, was it Europa?
Ganymede.
Ganymede, yeah.
Yeah.
We saw that happen, that when they got there too late to prevent it. The merging went bad, the ship went crazy, started to destroy the base around it. So apparently they learned their lesson from that incident and started doing merges out in space, and whoops, there's another vessel within range. Oops.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I went back and reread To the Ends of the Earth, and there's the planetoid that Gideon and Matheson do a flyover and find craters that are awfully reminiscent of the impact of the main weapon from Excalibur, their main giant gun or whatever.
Right, right.
And while they don't say it as such, that makes me wonder whether or not there's another ship that went renegade, similar to what happened at Ganymede. It just kind of went nuts and started shooting everything. So maybe there's more of those things floating around out there that are just kind of half insane.
Yeah. Well, no, I would think that they would have captured the insane ones or deactivated them. They just weren't quick enough to do it before it did any damage. I mean, think about it. A rogue ship flying around destroying stuff, that you can't keep quiet for very long, especially if you have like six or seven of them.
Well, remember,
one of those things is bound to cross into shipping lanes, and as soon as the Centauri or the Bracari lose a really expensive shipment, they're going to raise a stink.
Oh, especially if it's the Bracari. Oh,
which might have been on tap for season two. Because one of the things that's very much pointed out in both of those scripts is that they're extremely off the beaten path. Major Lee even says, "What are you doing out here, Captain?" And Gideon tells him, "I'm supposed to be out here. This is what my job is. I'm supposed to be out places where nobody goes."
What are you doing out here?
Right. Exactly. So I can see that maybe not quite yet something has gone through shipping lanes. Man, but you know, to me that is almost a nice, exciting wrinkle to the whole thing. If they would have done something like that, or could have done something like that, because you know it's a little, you know, the evil government doing experiments, things man was not meant to know. Okay, we kind of done that. I'm curious about these apparent old ones, as I'm going to call them, that abduct Arena. But you know, we'll see. But man, the idea of just Incredible Hulk ships running around, you know, and nobody can stop them. It's going to be more a question of, you know, just trying to minimize the damage. That's kind of a cool concept.
Or maybe a rogue one that's flying around and it's having flashbacks to its humanity and it's trying to overcome.
Yeah, right.
What's happened to it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things that it could be really intriguing with all that. So, anyways. What else do we need to say about this?
Not sure. I think here's we covered all the high points. Main one being, my God, why didn't we get this and see it and get more?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. I will leave you with one of my favorite lines out of this. After Galen and Gideon have left the planet, and Gideon's kind of made a couple pointed remarks about, hey, yeah, it's kind of like organic technology what they're doing down there. Hmm? But as they get back into his flyer, Gideon says, you know, I must be an entirely new and undiscovered kind of stupid not to have put it together until now.
Yes, that one got me too. Yes.
That is a good line.
Yep. So, all right. Well, why don't we go ahead and take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll close this thing out.
I'm Michael R. Menengate.
I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Michael Stackpole.
And I'm Brian Brown.
Join us for an exciting romp through literature and books.
Romp?
We're not romping.
We're supposed to be cool.
That's
smooth.
Right.
Okay.
It's the cool.
It's the smoothing sounds.
The smoothing sounds.
I don't know, but romp just brings forth images of Michael in tights, and I'm so not going there.
Well, which Michael?
It doesn't matter. Neither one would be very good.
If you would like to join this thing that we do every week, it's called Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Take two. Welcome to Dragon Page, cover to cover, where the elite meet to discuss literature.
Okay, let's go back to the tights images. Yeah.
Dragon Page cover to cover, where you'll never know what you're going to get next.
Okay, let's wrap this puppy up for, I guess, wrap it up for 2011.
Yeah, it looks like, I think at this point in time, we're looking at holiday schedules and we're off doing things and children have things going on and that sort of thing. And give us a chance to kind of regroup, take some time and get some reading done, because now we're sort of in the reading portion of our program. And that takes a little bit longer than watching a TV episode. So, yes, I think at this point in time, you will not hear from us again until the first of the new year, 2012. The year the Mayans proved us all wrong. You know what the Mayan calendar, this whole Mayan calendar end of the world business reminds me of? The concept of object permanence that developmental psychologists talk about with toddlers and babies, that they see the object, they mean that it's real, but then when you like put it behind something, it ceases to exist entirely.
Is it peekaboo theory?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yes. So it's like,
I hadn't heard that one.
So it's like, it's not the end of the world. They just didn't make another calendar. It would be like, it's like assuming it's the end of the world because your Buffy the Vampire Slayer calendar for 2011 doesn't have January 2012 in it. Oh, Buffy says there's no... It's the end for Buffy. It's the end for all of us.
The way I hear it, the calendar just recycles at that point, and it's the same thing.
It's supposed to recycle, but it's supposed to... But it's the resetting of the long count. And they were referring to a myth that said something about, what was it? Something about the planet aligning with the center of the galaxy, which lines us up with a nasty gamma ray burst and just kind of resets everything, you know, kind of erases us all and we start all over again, depending on which myth you decide to believe. There's just a bunch of earthquakes and a bunch of coastal cities get flooded out and we have to move inland and build taller buildings or something. I don't know.
Or maybe nothing will really happen at all.
I think maybe it's more like Tuesday's going to feel more like Wednesday.
No.
It must be a Thursday. I could never get the hang of Thursdays.
The one thing that I thought was hilarious, that one computer that analyzes data on the internet and in the news and the social media, it actually has predicted trends, not specific events, but like trends for information or market shifts or certain things that it's been pretty much spot on. There's actually a 6-month gap from December 2012 to June 2013. And then it continues on after that, like it's normal. And the scientists analyzing this are going, what the fuck?
Siesta.
The fact that it just kind of goes, whoosh, yeah. It just comes to this slamming halt. And then wakes up 6 months later going, oh, okay, we were asleep, now we're back, you know. So I'm like, okay, that worries me more than these other stories.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre, isn't it? That is weird.
Yeah, that one got my attention. I'm like, wait, huh? What? So yes, I don't know. I don't know. Can we stretch this show out to December 21st, 2012, you think?
Nothing else, we will at least reconvene for a special end of the world show.
I got 3 monitors here and 16 gigabytes.
Yeah, that's what we can do. We can recite all of the epic speeches from Babylon 5. You know, Sheridan's Marilyn Monroe speech. We've got Jacquard's Declaration of Principles speech.
Yep.
We've got Ivanova's
Any of them.
Yeah, several of them. We can do Ivanova's God mantra. We can also do the I'm the right hand of vengeance. Come here to kick sorry butt all the way back to earth.
Yep.
And of course, boom shabalabala.
Yes.
So we can do that. We can do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so taking a break for the holidays, people. Quite likely starting up in January with the last of the Crusade unproduced scripts. There's just that one more, right? Bugs,
yep.
Little Bugs have lesser bugs.
Yep.
And then after that, we're going to jump into some fun things. So everybody who's been preparing or who has been waiting for the flag to drop, consider this the dropping of the flag.
Yeah, start reading, people.
Start reading your novels.
My book will be here by then.
I should tell people now, we are actually going to start off the printed materials discussion with Parliament of Dreams, which is the academic discussion of the world of Babylon 5, or the universe of Babylon 5, just because I want to basically implode people's brains with the stuff that these people talked about before we get into the fluff of the novels.
Yeah.
And yes, I am still coming up with a plan to cover the 9 original numbered novels in the least painful way possible.
Quickly? Or...
Well, that's just right. It. Somebody has to take the hit and read them. I mean, they're not horrid, but they're not great either. And like I said, there was a tasty toy surprise in Voices that was actually relevant to the storyline between Susan and Talia. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
How did this never get mentioned in the series, but so be it. So I'm curious now, because I didn't read all of them way back when. I bought all of them. I didn't read all of them. And I'm curious to find out how many others of them, besides Shadow Within and Dream of City of Sorrows.
Dream of the City of Sorrows, yeah.
And I think there was another one, Whisper...
Whisper of Your Voice, the Touch of Your Shadow, Whisper of Your Voice, or whatever that was. I think it was only Shadow Within and To Dream were the two official
canon for the whole entire story.
Right.
But I think there was something within Whisper that related to Shadow Within, I thought.
Well,
should
we just do a whole non-canon show and then take the other parts as a separate thing?
Mm.
Well, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, we'd have to figure it out, because it'd be very, 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 very difficult to cover 7 to 9 novels in one episode.
Yeah, right.
So, we'll see how that goes. And then we can get into the trilogy where people like Gary and Edmund have volunteered their time. I think who else volunteered to talk about the Technomage trilogy?
I don't know. I'll have to go digging back through the Gmail.
Okay. And then we can get into the trading cards and the collectible card games, which thank
Oy vey.
God I didn't do.
Yeah, right.
And I still and want the, now.
And the toys. Oh, the many toys.
Not enough.
Yes. Huh?
Not enough.
Not enough toys. I have to find that old price guide, because that price guide had a list of all the toys and the dolls, which was really cool. Because at one point, I remember thinking, I cannot do this. So I made the conscious choice not to do dolls. I stuck with the books, and I stuck with the trading cards, which are awesome, by the way. I actually have the binder of Babylon 5 cards sitting right here in front of me right now.
Nice.
Jealous.
Yeah, just a bit.
Okay, so that'll do it for 2011, kids. Thank you very much for supporting us.
Putting up with us.
Putting up with us and our erratic schedule these past few months. But hey, I'm employed and not homeless, so I'm thinking that's a bonus.
Yeah, we're all happy for we are truly happy for that, no doubt.
So go to BabylonPodcast.com, catch up on any episodes you might have missed, get into the discussions of some of the episodes that we've delved into, and also donate if the Christmas spirit has you feeling so generous. Well, it'd be greatly appreciated. Yep. The forums are still open. I don't know how active they are, but you can find them over at farpointforums.com. If you want to send in an email with any comments on what you've heard or what you'd like to hear before, or if you want to email in your own pre-recorded voicemail message, that email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, if you want to call in your voicemail to our voicemail line, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Here, the end of the line came upon us all.
And we will see you next time on the other side of the gate.